ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Welcome, everybody. So nice to have you here on a Wednesday evening. Because there's something about Wednesdays. It's in the middle of the week. And taking the time. Welcome back, Shyamalanki. We definitely missed you. Being in the middle of the week and taking the opportunity to hear and chant. Shravanam Kirtanam is a very demonstrative spiritual practice, because one could get caught up in the current of activities and just float right by Wednesday, right? But making a stand on a Wednesday night is a good idea. Hare Krishna. So, Sarva, welcome back. Hare Krishna. Nice to see you. So I offer my respectful obeisances to my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to all the great acharyas, and to all the devotees who are present here today. You are Vaishnavas, and the Vaishnavas are the most worshipable of all. They are the tadiya, or the paraphernalia of Krishna. And as mentioned by Lord Shiva to his wife, tadiyanam samarjana, the tadiya is most dear to Krishna. His devotees are the most dear to him. So, in building a spiritual foundation, there are various aspects. One is to discriminate between matter and spirit. This is helpful because the material world is a dichotomous situation where spiritual beings in material bodies, and we get different signals. I had a program at Google just before this, and before I left my house, I had set my Maps application to take me to the address, but because it wasn't catching on right away, I pushed Waze also. And I didn't realize they were both going at the same time until I pulled out and I was driving a few blocks. And when I got a little further on the freeway, they were giving me different directions. One said get off at Rangsdorf, and the other said get off at Shoreline. I said, I can't tell whose voice is who and who I trust more. But anyway, I got off at Rangsdorf because it was closer. But then it really got interesting, because once we got into the maze around Google, one was saying turn left and the other saying turn right. And I really had no place to pull over to shut one off. So I had to sort of find my way. Eventually I got to a stoplight and I turned one off. And then I took the direction from just one main source. And it got me there eventually. But I was thinking about how the body and senses gives its own direction. As Prahlad Maharaj mentions, the senses are pulling in different directions, giving demands. They have their cravings. They have their interests. And those are at odds oftentimes, for, as Krishna says in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, with one who is untrained, for somebody who's untrained, who is, leaves the mind unbridled, he puts it in that metaphor of a horse, then self-realization is very difficult work. So being able to actually tune in to the right frequency, the right message, the right direction is important. Finding out where that direction is coming from. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives very clear directions about what to do and what not to do. One of the verses that is helpful and important, of course they all are, but this one in the realm of what I'm talking about now, is in the Bhagavad Gita, fifth chapter, 22nd verse, 5.22. Everyone say 5.22. Yehi samsparshaja poga dukha yonaya evate adyantavanta kaunteya nateshu ramate buddha. So this samsparsha, sparsha means the touch between the senses and the sense objects, physical touch. So the senses all have their counterparts in this world. And interestingly, in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna speaks about how, actually it's Hamsa who speaks about this, and maybe it's in the 12th canto in that case, how the senses and their objects have an intimate connection. So, as described by Kapila Dev in the 3rd canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, when a living entity is within the womb, that living entity, who's fortunate, becomes aware of his predicament, existential situation, that he's a spiritual soul actually trapped within this cycle of birth and death, and now he's coming through the womb of a mother, and there's nothing really he can do about it. And he also is aware of the fact, from previous experience, that as soon as he comes out of the birth channel, his senses will externalize, and he'll be overwhelmed by that experience. And when the senses become externalized, they become naturally connected to their sense objects. Because, as Hamsa says in the Bhagavatam, the senses are embedded in, the sense objects are embedded in the mind, and the mind's embedded in the sense objects. That explains a lot, doesn't it? Why the senses automatically go to certain objects. And it's fairly universal. In fact, it's absolutely universal. There's ways in which the living entities with particular bodies are attracted to various sense objects. And you can predict it. You can say he's going to go for the corn because he's a pig, or whatever the pig goes for, because that's just what he's into. And that's why he's into it. It's built in. So from that situation, in the womb, coming out, becoming overwhelmed, and then again being captured by the outside allurements for the senses. And Krishna gives this information for human beings. Yehi samsparshaja bhoga dukha yonaya evate. So yonaya comes from the word yoni, which means a womb or source, but in this case it's nice as a metaphor, the way in which dukkha, yonaya, means that what's born, what's the result of samsparsha bhoga, which means happiness or enjoyment that comes from connecting the senses to their sense objects, touching. And I once heard Sri Nayananda Maharaj speak about how actually the idea of two beings coming together and finding great happiness in the sparsha of touching one another could be very clinically described, like maybe two people who are driving those big machines, like tractors, you know, with all those devices on them that go up and down. What's that called? A tractor? What? Yeah, earth movers and things like that. And then they come together, and then they're experiencing some happiness by their, the different contraptions touching one another. And think, oh, that's very romantic, you know. It's actually a driver in there, and the machine's actually touching. They're not actually, but they're moving the levers. So in a similar way, when bodies come together in this world, which is considered, there's something erotic about that. There's, from a very different perspective, it's like these two machines sort of coming together and touching one another. So sparsha, that touching, that coming together with the objects of the senses, what does it breed? It breeds dukkha. So from the womb comes out a little child. What's his name? Dukkha. Hi, Dukkie. Welcome. Thanks for coming in and to ruin my life. And little Dukkie comes out, And in the Yoga Sutra, we have some further explanation of this idea, why it's called dukkha. Because when the senses, when one considers the interaction of the senses and sense objects, there's an ambivalence, because one intuitively knows that there is a beginning and an end, just as it's said in the second half of this sentence, of this verse. And that is that there's an anxiety that as soon as I get this thing, I'm going to have to give it up at some time. Does that ring true with you all? That is, you know, whatever I get, I'm going to have to give it up anyway. So say somebody finds the perfect mate and they come together. In stories, when I was a child, oftentimes the ending was, and they lived happily ever after. And I remember my brother and I saying, how's that work? How's that exactly? It's like, Mom, Dad, we got a question. Is it happily ever after? What do you mean? And I know, being in a family for so many years and thinking like, God, this is such a nice family. We really want to keep it together. And I hope my mom and dad live forever. But having that anxiety inside, thinking, boy, they're really not going to. In fact, when I became a devotee, I was still attached. And I was thinking like, what do I do when my parents die? Even though I know the philosophy, there was a connection there that was undeniable. And of course, the experience is visceral when a mother dies or a father dies. It's as if there's an umbilical cord that's still there on a subtle level. There's a very powerful connection that one has to the material world. However, there's an intuitive understanding that whatever I get, I'll have to give up later. It'll come and it'll go. So this, Patanjali says, this is one of the reasons that sparsha is a source of unhappiness. Because if your happiness is based just on that, then you're living in the ephemeral realm where it comes and goes and you'll be in anxiety. And the second thing he says that causes misery because of connection of the senses and their objects is samskar. Samskar, in the context in which he mentions it, is that when I enjoy something by touching my senses to the object, to its object, then there's an impression in my mind that I got some pleasure from that. And that impression compels me to seek it again. Of course, I may not be able to get it again. Or I may not want it again, but I'm still compelled to get it again. In fact, the samskars direct us, purva samskar, we say, purva samskara samskritaha, because of previous samskar, previous impressions, which are there within the subtle mind. When I come back into the world, I still have proclivities because of previously touching the outside world with my senses. It was registered. There's an impression there that is compelling me to seek various kinds of happiness in this life. That's why some people, as soon as they start to grow up, you'll notice they have various tendencies because of previous samskaras, and the momentum is there. And even in this life, we see that oftentimes people will touch the senses to their objects. They'll get the temporary happiness that it produces, but then they realize the drawbacks of that kind of connection, and they'll say, I don't want it anymore. But then the senses say, nope, I do. And when the samskara becomes so strong that the intelligence can't even overrule, this is like an addiction. This is called addiction, because someone may know very well, people all the time, it's like, I should quit smoking, you know? I really should quit smoking, but I've tried 6 times and I just can't. There are many different kinds of addictions, specific addictions, but there's a general addiction. In fact, one of my godbrothers used to say, everyone should go to AA, 12-step. Everyone should be on a 12-step program because everyone's addicted to the material world. There should be... In fact, this is what this is. This is a, by the way, you were invited here tonight. Of course, you don't need it, but I'm here speaking for myself. A 12-step program to become unaddicted to the material world. So that is, the drawback, which is mentioned here. Yehi sam sparjaja bhoga dukha yonai evate. Whoever spells that out, whoever comes out and says it so clearly, so plainly, so cleanly as Krishna is in this verse. And then he goes on to say, adyantavanta kaunteya nateshu ramate buddha. So he's saying a Buddha, an intelligent person, ramate, doesn't take pleasure in this kind of so-called happiness because adyantavanta, it has a beginning and an end. It'll begin and it'll end. And the only way to live in that realm and think that this is worth pursuing is if one's in ignorance. And clinically, in fact, the definition of avidya is to invest one's energies in trying to enjoy that which is temporary. That's what the very definition of avidya is, that I have a thirst for asat, that which will not persist, that which is actually insubstantial, it doesn't actually exist. That's why it's called asat, because sat means that which it has substance. It really does exist. So there's asat, but I want it. It's a reflection, but I want it. You can't have it. There's nothing there, but I still want it. This is avidya. And then there's asmita, which is another aspect of this full absorption in the material world, which is the sense of mine. I interact with the outside world, and I see all the objects, and I designate them as mine. Bhumi, Mother Earth. We'll find in the Bhumi Gita, in the 12th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, when she speaks, several verses, says that I'm watching over millennia as people come and go, and each one of them makes a claim on the face of the earth, said, this is mine. And they spill blood fighting over this property, that property. And she's from her perspective, is like, isn't this a little foolish? Aren't you little insect, a lifetime, duration of life, and you're coming and you're trying to claim this is my place? It's just a plot of earth. I saw several years ago a map which showed the political boundaries in Iraq, and they've changed hundreds and hundreds of times. And each time it changes, it shows a different color. So it belonged to this one, that one, this one, that one, this one, that one. It makes your head spin. It changes so many times. In fact, anybody who studied American history knows, oh, the French owned this part, and then Mexico owned this part. Actually, this used to be Mexico around here, and then there was this revolution, that battle. If you look at an American map, it changed so many times. And who was here before? The native people who are living here. Who was here before them? Somebody else. And over again, people come out and they say, this is mine. It's like, Bhumi's going, that's stupid. And it is. And this idea that this I'm going to claim something here is this phenomena of asmita. This is mine. And the only thing that actually matters is the soul, is Krishna. And the proof is, as soon as you withdraw the soul, withdraw the consciousness from any situation, it no longer has substance. For instance, greatest, most beautiful movie star in the world. Who is that? Let's not name any names. And someone says, I want to hang around with that person. But as soon as that person withdraws from the body, you say, go ahead, hang around. It's like, you can sleep in here in the same room. And it's like, I don't want to sleep in the same room. It's like, why not? Because because the object of actual animation and the center of the real association, the person is gone. It animates matter. But asmita means I don't understand that principle. And I claim so many things to be myself, not the least of which is the body that I'm inhabiting. And this causes a lifetime of fear. Bhayam dvitiya abhinibheshitasyat ishad apetasya viparyayosmriti. This comes from the Havi Yogendra, who says that as soon as you consider that there's myself and my things, there's I and then there's my, all my things, and I say this body now is mine. And with that misconception arises fear. So the Asmita principle is universal for those who are not educated in the spiritual science. In the animal kingdom, if you mess with a grizzly bear's cubs, she'll take your head off because they're her cubs. And if somebody messes with your car, you'll become very upset. But if you see somebody messing with somebody else's car, you'll just keep driving by. It's like, that's too bad because it's not yours. So this designation, asmita. And then we have what's called raga, which means attachment, deep attachment to various temporary situations in this world. This sense of attachment is one of the symptoms of material life. And then its opposite comes, dvesha. I do everything I can to ward off unhappiness. And in fact, I live my life in such a way as to insulate myself from misery so it doesn't come to visit me. That is the main part of the endeavor in material life, is to ward off misery rather than to actually find happiness, because misery is so prevalent. However, both of those, raga and dvesha, are symptoms of a misunderstanding of one's actual identity. And then last is abhinibheshita, which means a full absorption in these principles. I become fully absorbed. So with these basic definitions, one can understand generally the predicament of soul in the material world. So Krishna comes along to give these statements, these types of statements, to understand, for us to understand how to, at least philosophically, from an intellectual point of view, detach ourselves from the full-on absorption in material life. Gives us permission with these kinds of verses to dissemble the ideas that I have about getting fully absorbed in the material world. So an intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with material senses. O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so the wise man does not delight in them. And here's Prabhupada's purport. Material sense pleasures are due to the contact of the material senses, which are all temporary because the body itself is temporary. A liberated soul is not interested in anything which is temporary. Knowing well the joys of transcendental pleasures, how can a liberated soul agree to enjoy false pleasure? In the Padma Purana, it is said, Ramate yogano anante satyarande chidatmani iti rama padinasau param brahma padiyate. The mystics derive unlimited transcendental pleasures from the absolute truth. And therefore, the supreme truth, the personality of God, it is also known as Rama. What's he called?
Rama.
In the Srimad Bhagavatam, also 5.5.1, it is said, Nayam deho deha bhajam nirloke, kashtan kamam arhate vidbujamye, tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam shudyed yasmad brahma saukyam tonantam. My dear sons, there is no reason to labor very hard for sense pleasure while in this human form of life. Such pleasures are available to the stool eaters, hogs. Rather, you should undergo penances in this life by which your existence will be purified, and as a result, you will be able to enjoy unlimited transcendental bliss. Therefore, those who are true yogis, raise your hands, true yogis, or learned transcendentalists, raise your hands, are not attracted by sense pleasures, which are all causes of continuous material existence. The more one is addicted to material pleasures, the more he is entrapped by material miseries. Fairly straightforward, isn't it? And this is the important philosophical point to carry in one's mind because, as I mentioned at the outset, the senses are embedded in the objects, and the objects are embedded in the senses, and the two don't easily separate. It requires a powerful method in order to bring the senses to the point of engaging them in at a higher level. Hrishikesha, Hrishikesham, Sevanam Bhakti Ruchite. Hrishikesha is the master of the senses, Krishna. And one who knows how to use all the senses for seva, to serve that master of the senses, then can live in the body and use the senses unlimitedly. But because it's for seva, that person becomes a jivan mukta. Iha yasya harer dasye karmana manasa gira nikila api avastastu jivan mukta su uchite. It is said in the Shastra that a liberated person is one who, although living in this body, iha yasya harer dasye, engages body, mind, speech, all the senses, in the service of the Supreme. And therefore, even while living in this body, even while engaging the senses fully, becomes a mukta, liberated personality. So this is an introduction to a few other points that I'm going to make, but at this point, we'll take a couple of reflections. Anything that you heard so far that's stuck in your mind? Yes. Nam smaranam.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I really like the point you mentioned that, you know, the senses are embedded in the mind and mind is embedded in the senses. So in computer science, they call it distributed computing, where, you know, the computing is going on, you know, both sides. So
distributed computing. I can feel a Shravanandi jaw coming on. Nice. Thank you very much. What other points stuck with you? Yes.
Maharaj, I like the point of you mentioned I and my cause of the fear, and that's I feel more relevant myself when I feel myself as a center of something, and then, you know, like it's not happening according to my way, then I, you know, feel more fearful.
I like the way you put that. When I find myself not in the center of something, right? Is that what you said?
In the center of something.
In the center
of something, yeah. But it's not happening according to my way.
It's not happening according to my way. And when it moves very quickly against your will, then we say it's a disaster or catastrophe or something. I was thinking about this during the Loma Prieta earthquake. That was in 1998. Some of you weren't born then. So when was it? 89. Yes, thank you. 1989, and I remember when that earthquake hit the Bay Area, and I was just thinking about earthquakes in general, because people were jittery after that. And being on the freeway, people would stop outside of the overpasses, because one of them pancaked over there in the East Bay, and people got crushed. So people were very much aware of how unstable the earth actually is at times. And so I remember being on the freeway, if there was a backup, people would not stop underneath because they were thinking about how it could come down at any point. Where did I start with this? I sort of got into the earthquake thing. And then disaster. And then I was thinking about how, you know, if you lived out in the middle of the woods or a field, like I was thinking the birds don't really care so much right now about whether it's going, only people who have built these rigid buildings and it's like it fits on a particular foundation and everything like that, then you start to get worried. But if you're a gopher living somewhere, you just dig another hole. It's not such a big deal. But there's a... The consideration has to do with how I have a vested interest. I have a vested interest in a particular place and a particular structure and how it works and everything like that. But in any case, the world can move very rapidly against my conception of how it should work, can work suddenly like that, and we call those disasters because it's going against me. But for somebody who doesn't really have a vested interest in the material world, who has a fluid of understanding of life, that whatever situation comes up, I'll adjust to it and keep doing my service, such kinds of things are not catastrophic. As you see, the devotee's way of seeing that is that it's Krishna's arrangement. Somehow Krishna's arranged for this to happen to give me a different perspective. Thank you. Yes.
Maharaj, I was thinking about how strong the strength of the samskaras, like even if you don't want to do it, the samskaras will pressurize you into the senses to get connected again to the sense object.
Yeah. It's an important principle to remember. And it's good to hear about it, to reinforce it for yogis, to know this, that it actually has there's a mechanical way in which the senses become obligated to come back to enjoy their objects if you allow them to go in a certain direction. It's not like you can just do it and walk away and that's it. There was an old song, you can walk away, but it's not over. You do it and you walk away and it's like, okay, you walked away, but it's not over. I'm coming back for you. The senses will come back like, bing, 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 bing. You know, by the way, back here, it's still waiting for you. Keep going. The samskara keeps going. So the good news, however, is, and this is mentioned in the Yoga Sutra, that as one puts one attention in the right direction and does not give in to various cravings, then the tendency begins to diminish, it shrinks. So don't contribute to it, because it, you know, especially certain types of sense gratification, they have a long-term, they have a long shelf life. So they can last a long time. It's like certain kinds of elements have what they call a half-life, you know, it could be like thousands of years before the isotopes begin to break down just even a little bit. So there's certain kinds of sense gratification that you touch that, and it's like, okay, remember you did that, now you have to go back and do it. I don't want to, I've moved on in my life. I said, but I haven't. I'm still here, you know. And this is actually because Krishna is the perfect moral agent. The way that the material world has been designed, the way he's designed the material world, is to sensitize us that I'm an agent and what I do is important. There's responsibility. And therefore, I can see just how much responsibility I have. If I am not attentive in my use of my senses, if I don't take proper direction, if I misuse them, then I get a result that reminds me of that again and again for longer than I might wish, until there's another kind of samskara in my heart, which is that I don't want that anymore. I'm not even going to go there anymore. And that's called maturity. One develops that by hearing and practicing, and even, as Prabhupada mentions in the light of the Bhagavad, even from that a kind of practice comes a learning experience when one does make a mistake that is indelible. And so Prabhupada says that mistakes may not be detrimental. That is, one may never take advantage of that statement. If one does, then you're not qualified to get the learning out of it. But the point is, if someone's sincere and they make a mistake, then that, as Prabhupada says, becomes the pillar to their success. And in the Sri Upanishad, vidyam cha vidyam chayas tad vedo bayam saha avidyaya mritum tirdva vidyaya mritum ashnute. Only one who can learn the process of nescience and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality. So there's a way in which, as one struggles with the avidya, and I mentioned in detail its different aspects, and goes on cultivating spiritual life, that juxtaposition gives one even more realization and insight. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, I was thinking, even the things which are embedded, it's very difficult to separate. But when we even associate voluntarily with not like-minded people, we get heavily influenced by that. So it's very difficult to get rid of what is already embedded. Now we are inviting extra problem by a mingling or associating with those who has a, we know that they could be having an active impact. And we experience, if we visit a friend who is into, different liking, then by the time evening when you come up, you started almost on your way back, started thinking, I wish I should have done this thing and that. So already enough problem with the embedded one. So we should be careful about.
So what does mingle mean? He said mingle. Don't be mingling. Let's find out what ming is. Mingle. Ing. Mingle means?
It's a verb which means to mix or cause to mix together. Move freely around a place or a social function. Associating with others. And the origin is late Middle English. It's a frequentative of the obsolete meng, which meant mix or blend.
Mix or blend.
And perhaps influenced by Middle Dutch mengelen. It's related to among. The word among.
Among. Related to among. Mingle, among. Mix. Yeah, mixing it up, mingling. Krishna says in 1322 Gita, Purusha prakritisto hi bhunte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangosya sarasad yoni janmasu. Said, you can understand why you're in whatever situation you're in now as the result of mingling. That's a Purusha prakriti stohi means the living entity in this world. Purusha, he calls Krishna, sarcastically calls the jiva Purusha in this verse. Because actually he's not, Purusha means the enjoyer, he's not really the enjoyer, but Krishna's, okay, you're taking that position. Purusha prakriti stohi, he's situated. Sto means to be situated in prakriti. So, bhunte prakriti jan gunan. So then, when he tries to enjoy matter, prakriti purusha prakriti stay bhunte prakriti jan gunan, and he goes on in his ways of enjoying matter. Karanam guna sangosya, and because of his association, his sangha, amongst the three modes of material nature, which means it's coming from other living entities, associates with. He achieves various stations in various bodies, various states of consciousness because of association. So Rupa Goswami says in his essential principles for advancing in devotional service, first on the negative side, then on the positive side, associate with good devotees and avoid the association of worldly-minded people. That is, people who still think the material, they can give it a shot here in the material world. And that you should too, by the way. So, sangha. Sa-anga means that it becomes part of you. And it is very subtle. It's so subtle that it's mentioned that the one of the things Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur talks about is how men associating with women can be very dangerous. You may think, I'm a liberated soul, but then you'll fall down. Happens all the time. Never think you're liberated. Never act liberated. You may be liberated, but don't act like it. And that's because of the powerful force of the material nature. And then he said that of men who are attached to women, it's even more pernicious, because somehow or other one's more open to it. Then on the other side, he said association with Krishna is very powerful for making perfection in life, but even more powerful is association with Krishna's devotees, those who are associated with Krishna. So on either side, association is the key, either sadhu sangha, or if one associates with worldly-minded people. And that's not to say that women are worldly-minded necessarily. If they're devotees, then it's not the same. But even in that realm, one has to be careful. One has to observe the fact that one has a material body that has senses that are embedded within the sense objects, and never the twain shall depart. Never the two shall depart. Yes, you had a point.
No, I was just commenting on what Radhakrishna Babu said about it's bad enough that we have samskaras, and then on top of that, if we have bad association. So in India, there's a very famous saying that you take a Karela dish and you are garnishing it with neem leaves.
Oh, look at that. Karela dish garnishing. That sounds like a blues song or something like that. I got the worst samskaras, and then something about association. I can't get no good association. Yeah, Karela with neem leaves on it. Yes, Shyamalangi.
I like the way you said that, you know, how Bhumi must be like laughing at, you know, the humans who are thinking this is my land, this is my space.
Yeah.
And not only like land-wise, if I, even when we are traveling, like I recently I had that experience, like when I was going from Hong Kong to Calcutta in the plane, so in like three seats, in the middle one was free. I was on the aisle side and another lady on the window side. But so I was happy that the seat is free. Maybe I can put something of mine there, because it's not mine, but I was just happy it's free. But before I could do, the lady, she put her bag. She took the blanket and she put all her food, whatever she ate, the plate there. She didn't use it. So it's just like that. We just want more and more.
What to speak of the armrest? Who gets the armrest like... Yeah.
I was remembering that Isha Vashyam Shloka there, you know, like, you know, how we...
Good. Good devotee. You didn't dump it all up when she went to use the restroom or something. I don't know what happened. The plane must have jerked. No, but that's... Yeah, it's a point well taken. It goes on, those little battles, and... A self-realized person becomes aware that nirmama, nothing is mine, doesn't become vitally attached. Of course, it's a different principle when one's managing Krishna's property. And devotees sometimes have missed this in the past. For instance, ISKCON vehicles, it's gotten better. But you know, it's community property. It's Krishna's van. Therefore, we don't change the oil for 10 years. And so many. I've been in a lot of near accidents because of that. But the mentality was because of having this sort of false renunciation and not taking care of things properly, including one's body. But in well, one's serving Krishna, one has to take care of all these things as if. Even more carefully than a materialist would, because it's for Krishna. And Prabhupada demonstrated this in his life. When he walked around the property, for instance, when the Krishna Balaram Mandir was being built, he would point to things like the materials being used for building. He would question whether they were top rate or whether they had been cheated. If he found somebody had swept garbage over into a corner, not picked it up, he would immediately tell people to go take care of it. My godbrother Banabhata Prabhu was the temple commander in Mayapur for some time. And when Prabhupada was there, one night, Banabhata was up in Prabhupada's floor where he lived in the Mandir, Chandradaya Mandir. He had his room still there. And Prabhupada looked out and there was a building being constructed across the property and there was a light bulb on inside. And Prabhupada noticed, he said, who has left that light on? And he looked at Banamati, he said, go turn it off. So Bana like ran across the whole property, climbed up in the building, turned the light bulb off. The acute sensitivity to taking care of Krishna's property. What other points?
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. We are really grateful to you the way you very simply led us to this beautiful understanding, namely to use the senses to serve the Master, and that is the ultimate liberation. Here we have the lotus feet of the Lord. We can serve Him with devotion from all our heart, and we get the reward from Him. So it's a very nice way to summarize that.
Thank you very much.
We thank you. We are grateful to you.
Thank you for bringing our attention to Krishna's lotus feet as well.
Yeah, especially to implant the senses and immerse them in the service to the lotus feet of the Lord, which is the summary of all the devotional service.
Yeah, in fact, it comes from this verse, sarvopadivanirmuktam tatparatvenanirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktir uttama uchite. Uchite. Sevanam bhaktir uchite, which describes how sarvopadi vinirmuktam, in the process of pure devotional service, the designations that I am this body, I am a particular nation, all these things are given up. Sarvapadi vinirmuktam, tatparatvena nirmalam, and the senses become purified, Hrishikena Hrishikesha, in the service of Hrishikesh, the master of the senses. Yes, from the text.
This is from Vaikunth Nayak Das.
Hmm.
Dhanvats Maharaj, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Like you mentioned, even after years of devotional practice, one can fall down. Why do the bad samskaras seem to have a longer shelf life than the good samskaras? Is it because I have exposed myself to more bad samskaras than the good samskaras? And what is the solution? Is it to simply keep investing in the good samskaras? Your servant, Vaikuntha Nayak.
Yes, keep investing. And, you know, it seems as if the others are so strong because of one's wholehearted investment in them for so many lifetimes. And now, making an abrupt about face and saying, okay, I'm going another direction, you may find them to be a little formidable, that's all. And yes, however, it's not that, we're talking about bad samskaras and good samskaras. What we're talking about is something which is a force beyond the action and reaction of the material world, the power of the holy name to undo one's previous karmas, even the proclivities one has within one's present mind and senses. Yet Brahma Sakshat Kritanishchayapi Vinashamayati Vinana Bogai Apaitinama Spuranina Tate Prarabdha Karmiti Viroti Vedaha. The Vedas declare that when the holy name appears, when there's mixes spurti, then all of one's karma is diminished. It is eradicated, in fact. And other verses say the same thing, like Yasvindra Gopam Atavendra Mahosukarma Bandan Rupa Palabhajanamata Noti Karmani Niradahati Kintucha Pukti Bhajam Govindamadi Purusham Tamahambhajami. That from Indra down to the Indra Gopu germ, all are being subjected to their previous karmas, except those are engaged in bhakti bhajan. They're hearing and chanting, they're worshipping Tulsi, they're worshipping the deity, they're going out door to door, Srimad Bhagavatam sets, and so on. And for those, their karma is being taken away. Karma ni nirdahati kintucha bhakti bhajan. Aparabdha palam papam kutam bijam palon mukham. Third line, please. Krameniva praliyante Vishnu bhakti ratatmanam. This verse from the Padma Purana describes various kinds of karma. Aprarabdha palam papam means aprarabdha, the karma that hasn't even manifested yet. For those engaged in the material life, they have not just their present karma they're dealing with, but there's warehouses full stored on Guantanamo Bay that are coming to visit them later. It's all so much saved up, you can't even experience it in a million lifetimes. It's all waiting for you there because it's been going on since a time immemorial. And it's impossible to come to the end of it. You can't outdo it with some kind of counteracting material activity. It has to come from a higher source, just like Obama has been signing as many pardons as possible before he goes out of office. Because why not? I mean, you know, 8 years and you're out, and then you might as well pardon nonviolent criminals as much as possible. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, drug offenders, they were just dealing drugs, but they didn't kill anybody. He lets them out of jail. And as soon as that certificate comes down from the president, they just say, "We're letting you out." They say, "Why?" And it's because he said so. That's it. So it comes down from Krishna. Yes.
Prabhu, it's reminded me of the line like when Radha Prabhu made the point how you engross in the material world and mingling with different people. Like Prabhupada in the morning japa walk, he was, you know, like discussing with I think devotees, and you know, like devotee was saying the scientists, you know, materialistic people, they say this atom is moving by themselves, and Prabhupada says, why? How it moving? You know, I'm walking on the earth. It's not moving, you know, themselves. I don't see it. It's a Prabhupada is moving slowly. You know, it can't see it. They need the microscope. And then Prabhupada say, you know, these scientists, they are so engrossed with material thing. One time, one of those got this book called E.G. Journey to Other Planet, and he was so excited. He said, wow, I can go to other planet. And he said, yeah, then can I come back? Prabhupada said, no. So then I don't want book. You want to stay in a material world.
Yeah. Okay, I'm moving on to the next part. Thank you for such nice reflections. Yes? Please, go ahead.
Actually, I was also thinking about the scientists, but that was in the beginning when you had mentioned that when a person passes through the birth canal, then the senses are externalized and he's bewildered. And I was thinking that's the reason the child cries, you know, when they're born. And the doctor says something else, like, you know.
Actually, I had a realization about that. You know, children don't just cry a lot, and they sleep a lot, too. Have you ever noticed that? You know what that is? It's jet lag. Because I've had jet lag before, and I know what it feels like. When you get extreme jet lag, it just like conks you out. You know, you wake up and just give me something to eat, and I'm going back to sleep. And so babies have that. It's a living entity. But you know, if you think flying from Hong Kong, they're flying through like who knows how it's time and space and different bodies and all kinds of stuff. And then they come out, and it's like, where am I? I'm tired, you know. And so this is the experience in the material world. We're extreme jet lag all the time from this journey. Brahmanda Brahmate Kon Bhagyavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. It's wandering, Brahmanda Brahmate, throughout all the universes wandering. No wonder we're tired. So one gets relief when one comes in contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his representative. So here we go. How to overcome what we call this weakness of heart. This is mentioned by Prabhupada in the last paragraph of the last verse in the 15th chapter, as you well know, because all of you know the 15th chapter by heart, I'm sure. And in this last last paragraph, Prabhupada speaks of weakness of heart. He said it has two components. One is becoming attached to matter and then becoming even more attached to matter. While one is performing devotional service in the association of pure devotees in full Krishna consciousness, there are certain things which require to be vanquished altogether. The most important thing one has to surmount is weakness of the heart. The first fall down is caused by the desire to lord it over material nature. Thus one gives up the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Lord. The second weakness of heart is that one, as one increases the propensity to lord it over material nature, he becomes attached to matter and the possession of matter. The problems of material existence are due to these weaknesses of heart. In this chapter, the first five verses describe the process of freeing oneself from these weaknesses of heart, and the rest of the chapter, from the sixth verse through the end, discusses Purushottam Yoga. So, weakness of heart, as Prabhupada says here, has to be vanquished altogether. And this means coming to nishta. This means coming to the platform where one is no longer influenced by the various samskaras, previous impressions, the pushings of the senses. All of these things are impervious to the devotee who is now standing on his or her own two feet in devotional service, having won the battle of anartha nivritti. And so this is important. Prabhupada says it has to be done. So you have to fight this battle, you have to overcome weakness of heart. So one of the aspects, for one of the methodologies for doing that, and as Prabhupada mentions, it's shown in the first six verses of this chapter. I'll just give a summary that Prabhupada is telling, Krishna is telling how we're looking at the reflection of the real world as we behold the material world. It's not actually substantial here. And then he recommends a change in attitude, that one become very humble. Nirmana moha jita sanga dosha adhyatma nitya vinivritti kama dvanvarva mukta sukaduka samjara gachanti mura paramavyayam tat. So, yeah, go ahead and move to that verse. 6. 15:6, right? No, 5. Yeah. Ni mana, without false prestige. So this is a point in which one must just give up one's own endeavor to try to overcome the weakness of heart in the material world. Of course, our endeavor has to be there, as otherwise we weren't talking about it. But internally, we bhakti actually means to depend on grace, depend on Krishna's mercy to deliver us, and not our own fancy footwork. As Lord Brahma said after trying to test Krishna, Gyane priyasamuda pasya namanta eva jivanti san mukharitam bhavati avartam stane stita shutigatam tanuvan manobir ye prayaso jita jito pyasitais trilokyam. Said, just give up trying to understand Krishna and approach him through your intelligence, but become a humble servant and hear submissively. So, ni mana, without false prestige, surrender. And begin to hear about Krishna in the association of devotees and serve with body, mind, and soul. And if one does that and conquers over bad association, jita sanga dosha, the fault of bad association, adhyatma nitya, and stays in contact with the process, the spiritual process, then one can come to this point of being unbewildered, amudha. Instead of being mudha, one becomes amudha, unbewildered. And he knows how to go to tat. Everyone say tat. It's a demonstrative pronoun. It's pointing to spiritual world. That. What is it? Tat. Tat. That's it. Om tat sat. What are you talking about? Tat. That. That topic. So, one should not mistake the reflection to be the reality, and then one should Also use the weapon of detachment, Krishna says in the beginning of the 15th chapter, first six verses. And then one should assume this attitude in order to advance in spiritual life. One should also deliberate carefully on one's real situation in life. One has to reset that frame of reference every day. One has to get some bandhagyan every day. And Prabhupada mentions, Lord Chaitanya mentions, when he's teaching Sanatana Goswami, or Rupa Goswami rather, that when the living entity is successful in leaving the material world, even when you're living in this body, you can leave the material world and live with, what do they call, dual citizenship. Have two passports, and you can live in the spiritual world at the same time, because the creeper grows that far. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warns, you still have to go on hearing and chanting. Otherwise, because the material energy is so powerful, that you can become overwhelmed. Hare Krishna, I'm overwhelmed. Great to see you all. You have to go on hearing and chanting. So while one's in a neophyte stage and practicing devotional service, you can take it for granted that the most important thing for you to do is to be on a regular program of hearing and chanting. Otherwise, you're not going anywhere. Really, it's true. You have to have an extremely nutritious diet of hearing and chanting every day. And you have to hear this about one's relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, you get what's called spiritual fade. If you don't do it one day, if you miss one day, then you'll miss another day, some other time, if you don't make it up. And if you miss a few days in a row, then that'll lead to missing a week. And after missing a week, you'll miss a month, miss a month, miss a year, you miss 10 years. And it happens all the time. So where'd you go for the last 20 years? I have no idea what happened. I just faded away, and next thing you know, Maya had me again. So you have to do every day. You have to be meticulous. And it's not that difficult because life's so short. It's not a big deal. Because it comes and goes so fast that if you just stick to it for long enough, you'll see, oh, lucky thing I stuck to it for long enough. Okay, so deliberation means coming together and making thorough consideration about the nature of the material world, the nature of the soul, and all that is explicated in the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. You don't need to go, you don't need to make it up yourself or speculate or find out from any other source. It's there in Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and I guarantee you, if you just listen carefully to the Bhagavatam, you'll have every spiritual nutrient you need to become strong in spiritual life. You just have to take your vitamins. And then you have to get a higher taste. So Krishna says as much in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita when he discusses narupamasyeha tatopa labhyate nanto nachadir nacha sampratishta ashvatamenam suvarudamulam asanga shastrena jitena chitva tatakpanam tatparimargitavyam yasmin gatana nirvatanti bhuya tameva chajyam purusham prabhadye yatak pravriti prashrita purani. And there, in the second half of the verse, I already mentioned in the first half, he has said that you have to cut down the tree, this reflected tree, with the weapon of detachment. Now here's the second part. Thereafter, everyone say, thereafter.
Thereafter.
The great thereafter. This is the exaltation that the devotee feels when coming in contact with real spiritual knowledge, that there now I do have a thereafter. There's somewhere for me to go. Thereafter, one must seek that place from which, having gone, one never returns. And there, surrender to that Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom everything began and from whom everything has extended since time immemorial. Problem solved. Journey over. So this is the complete course. Cut down the tree and then make your journey to the great thereafter. So in that approach to Krishna, one has to apply some simple practical methods as given by our acharyas. One of those is mentioned by Rupa Goswami in his Upadeshamrita, that one prohibition is that one should not eat too much or collect too much. Isn't that a practical, down-to-earth, simple thing to tell us? I mean, this is the essence of all instruction. After all, it's the Upadeshamrita. It's the nectar of instruction, and he's condensed it into just a few verses. And one of them, which is in the book, is Atyahara Priyashascha. So this Atyahara means, Atyahara means overeating or overcollecting. And if you get too much stuff you don't need for practical purposes, it will distract your attention so much that you won't be able to make spiritual advancement. You won't be able to hear and chant properly either. And it causes all kinds of problems. So you have to get rid of those things that you don't need for your service. And it takes some work, because more things will come in through the different doors of your house. They just add up. But you have to be vigilant. So it helps to be Atyahara, to be on the anti-Atyahara program, to get rid of unwanted clutter in your life. And that includes clutter in your brain, too. So one shouldn't extend one's energy, it's a mental energy, into topics and issues that cannot be acted upon. This means that there are lots of concerns that one may have about the world, about life, that you can get entangled in, that you have absolutely no power of doing anything about. And therefore, what is the use of thinking about them? That's also clutter. Pare down and find out, what are those, where are those places where I can expend my mental energies, which have been given to me by God, so that I can actually make tangible progress in spiritual life, and keep your mind there. He gives other kinds of advice there, which one should study very carefully, because these are practical things. That's fun. It's like you can actually fill out the box and say, I'm getting rid of clutter. Other philosophical parts may seem a little ethereal and hard to apply in one's life, but these things are practical and you can experience for yourself. For instance, before you go to bed at night, if you make sure that your house is completely clean and the room that you're going to wake up in is meticulously ordered. And it's amazing. It happens to me all the time. I wake up and I go, who did that? Oh yeah, I did. Thank you very much. And the fact is that I feel enlivened as soon as I see that I was kind enough to myself to make my environment suitable for spiritual practice, mode of goodness, when I wake up in the morning. This is the anti Atyahara principle. One should be always battling against clutter. Don't leave things out of place. Prabhupada was like this, you know. Whenever he'd move from one station to the next, that station means he was always traveling, and he called them camps. He talked in military language, you know that? Look in his letters, and he would say, Camp New Dwarka. And, you know, Camp, what? Camp ISV, yeah. That's how he signed his letter, like a military general. I'm in this camp, I'm in that camp. And when he would set up his new, like, wars are won in the general's tent, they say. So he had his general's tent there. Wherever he went, he had his base. And on his base, he had a desk. And on top of the desk, everything was in the right place. And whoever was lucky enough to be serving Prabhupada would then bring the things, and they'd put them all in the same place. If you put that over there, no, it goes here. It's like, don't extend all kinds of mental energy and get all jumbled up, because it's easy to do nowadays, to get over-cluttered in one's brain. So stay out of that, and also stay out of things that don't concern you, because you can't do anything about them anyway. So don't make a big deal out of it. Sadhus don't do that. They stick with those things that actually matter and that they can actually do something about. Of course, they're compassionate for the world, and they do care about everything, practically, but they don't waste their time. They don't overclutter. So stay simple and uncluttered, mentally and in your physical environment. And another important point for Adiyadhara is order your life by making sure that you have a clear set of written goals and systems for your life that you're following. You have to know what your priorities are, so that you can hit those priorities first and have a maximum impact on your life. Prioritize your tasks. Okay? And I have one more thing to talk about after that, but I'll take any reflections for that second section. Atyahara. Or anything else we talked about.
Thank you, Maharaj. This point of over-cluttering is really, really, I can see is very important. And I see sometimes people get so many things that they get confused whenever they have to go out. Their whole time goes into, okay, where is the thing, where I do? Like, because there are so much things to collect and unnecessarily things is, it just make them. And especially that you told about this clutter in the mind. I remember one of my friend, he has so much concern that, okay, Christians are converting Hindus to Christian. So he's thinking here, okay, I told, okay, you do first thing yourself. Why you're, and definitely we are concerned, but he's just getting worried and do something positive. So I can make that point when you say that how internal clutter can distracting.
Yeah, I like your point. That's very practical, the second thing you said. There may be something that's so objectionable to me, and it may be, you know, with good reason I object to it, but why let it completely distract me from my practice and dwell on it, since there's nothing I can really do about it on that level, right? Yeah.
And one question, when you said about cut down the tree and then make journey, so this process is like simultaneous or like first cut down the tree and then you go to the journey? How this process happen?
Yeah, it's simultaneous. But Krishna gives it in this order. They meet in the middle of the verse. Sangha shastrena dridhena chitva. When Devahuti begins her entreaty to her son, you know, to give her spiritual knowledge and gives prayers, recognizing that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, she says, you are the axe. She's about to ask him questions. She said, you are the axe who can cut down this material attachment, this tree of material attachment. So it's a simultaneous process, but one should be aware of the fact that one has this connection to the material world. It's been there since a time immemorial. And by the process of devotional service, Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Priyojita Janayat Yashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayara Haitukam. It's natural by performing direct devotional service that one will get knowledge and detachment from the world. But there is an awareness of that. This is this in the Panchasamskar essay by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where he mentions various steps. First is tapa, where one regrets one's involvement in the material world in the first place. There's a repentance. And that helps to cut down the tree.
Maharaj, I have a question regarding removing the clutter. I know there are so many things piles up in a garage, and when we try to clean it, we feel like, oh, you know, there is some value in it, and we can keep it for some time. And each and every item which you try to throw, and I have been struggling with this thing for almost like a whole year. I have a goal to cut to 50%. And every time I go, I think this somebody else can use it, or this may be used sometime later. or this book is has emotional value, or maybe a little bit, and then I want somebody to use it, I don't want to throw it. So do you have any advice, you know, how to get rid of that?
Yeah, well, you just have to, you know, it is a difficult thing, and you do have to attack it from all angles. Like, you know, if there is truth in that, somebody could use a book or something like that. Actually do the steps, rather than short circuit there every time and say, oh, and then come back to it a year later. Find out, you know, is there a place for used books? If it's a devotional book, Ramananda Sakal will take it, because he'll sell it at the Rathiatra, you know. And then there are other ways in which you have to realize that attachment you have, thinking that if I keep it, maybe I'll fix it later or something like that. That it only lasts for a little while. As soon as it goes in the recycle bin and it's gone, you know, you feel relief actually taking one thing. I've just noticed in my own living environment that the habit of putting everything away right after I use it makes a big difference. Because I could take books out. I mean, it had, this morning I was looking at the Gita and I had about 5 different Gitas stacked up, different commentaries, Vishwanath and Baladeva and everything. And then, you know, this comes out, that comes out, this you put, and after a while, you know, your whole place can be full of stuff. So just getting in the habit, every time you use one thing, you put it away. And these are kind of, this is sattvic cultivation. Keep your life simple and ordered. And anyway, for your thing, I mean, there's volumes written about how to do this, so it's obviously not an easy thing. But if you dedicate yourself to it and do it methodically and become determined, it can be done. I saw my parents, you know, they were getting old enough so they knew they were going to pass away at some point, and they started getting rid of tons of stuff. And by the time they passed away, everything was in pretty good order. It was much easier, but it was still just for one, you know, family, one couple. They were married for a long time. Didn't have a huge house, but I mean, it took us siblings a long time to distribute all their stuff. One living entity, human anyway, keeps a lot of things. So whatever way you can, get it down to a minimum. Sometimes you just have to get really brutal. What's the word? Like, okay, it just goes, you know. Get rid of things fast. Give them away as fast as you can. 1, 2.
I was just going to tell Radha Kripa Prabhu that he can invite Mukharvinda to stay with him over a weekend. And my experience of 35 pair of shoes and more than 50 lipsticks, you just put them in a bag and he will run, you know, to the dumpster. He'll dump it before you can change your mind.
So we have the Mukharvind anti-clutter service. Just single tell them when you're going to be away and leave them the key. And when you come home, you have your set of Bhagavatams, a Gita, and you'll be ready to start over. Yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. I like the point about removing the clutter.
Yeah.
And I think Shraddha Mataji already mentioned it. I was just going to advise Radha Kripa Prabhu, do it with someone else. Don't do it yourself. Who will question maybe what is going on in your mind.
Do that cleaning up exercise with someone else.
Yeah. When you have a lot of hesitation, then they will question you that why you are, you know, kind of bringing it outside, and then have a discussion that will help you.
That's why there's professional organizers. They're high, you know, they have that perspective. They know it's a psychological. They know that it's a psychological condition to hold on to everything, so they help people to let go.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention one more thing: is even the scientists who conduct experiments, they also do the same thing. Basically, when they are checking a cause and effect, just to make sure there are not too many causes which is causing the effect. To remove that clutter, they make sure all the other causes are constant. And there is only one cause they change to make sure this is the cause which is causing the effect. So they kind of remove the clutter from their experiments. And that's what helps them in coming up with conclusion.
Nice. Good points. Yes.
Hare Krishna, Prabhupada. I like one of the items you said about
the extremely nutritious diet of hearing and chanting every day. So I got introduced to ISKCON when I was in engineering, but I slowly went away and I came back here like maybe last 2 years. So it particularly struck me, and one of the biggest fears I have right now is I look for things what might take me away from Krishna, and I am extremely careful. One thing that you said, which is very practical, is we are slackened in our practice of devotion for a day, and it happens for a few days, and eventually maybe a week, we take it for granted, yeah, that's okay, and then a month and then a year. So it's actually very practical, and I pray, I hopefully will never have those days.
Yeah, it's good to always keep praying like that. The most advanced devotees keep that mantra going, they keep that prayer going, let me stay simple. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I'm murka. When he met Prakashananda Saraswati, murka means I'm a fool. His spiritual master called him a fool. So he was appreciating wearing that as a badge. Say, I'm a fool. And he mentioned that one should keep oneself in that position. Not that you should act like a fool, but you should consider yourself a fool, fully dependent on strict practice. Not that now I've been around for a while, I can cut a few corners and that's because I'm cool. Because then that's the beginning of the end. Stay as a neophyte all the way till your last breath. And do your duty carefully. And sometimes people, they become, like, now I'm doing a very advanced kind of bhakti, so I don't need to chant anymore. I only chant in my mind, and you should know that that's fine. That was not what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us. It's not what he said, even in the practice of Raganuga Bhakti. When one is practicing Raganuga Bhakti, he said one should remain externally as a neophyte. Cross all your T's, dot all your I's, move your lips when you chant, say the syllables. Don't think, now I'm liberated, now I'm advanced, therefore I saw somebody come in and doing Mangal Arati at like 6 o'clock in the morning or something like that. I said, what are you doing? He said, it's the thought that counts, right? It's just spontaneous. It's like, no, that's not how the Pantratriki works. You do it on time. This was in the temple. And long, long time ago. So you have to be careful. Stick on that. And as far as collecting goes, Rupa Goswami also says and brings these verses out that one should not collect too many books, spiritual books even. That doesn't mean Bhagavatams or our books. But what he meant was, and he says, first, don't become a bookworm. Don't collect too much knowledge for the sake of being a greatly learned pundit. That I know everything, I know every commentary. I mean, you should know every commentary, but you should know the commentaries that are specifically passed down to help us advance in devotional service. Prabhupada used to say, oh, we have these 5 books, this is sufficient. Of course, he never indicated that we should boycott the books of the previous acharyas. In fact, we said we should read them, but he said we should assimilate what we already have. This is another propensity for over-collecting, over atyahara. People go down to the market in Lohi Bazaar, and there's a bookshop there of run by, what's his name? Rasi Bihari Lal. He'll print anything. God bless you if you're listening, but I mean, anything. It doesn't matter who edited it, who wrote it, who translated it. He'll put a nice cover on it. It's like how much, you know, if you got rupees, you got a book. And, you know, people collect all these commentaries, all these books, everything in the world, every Purana. They're like, what are you reading? And this and that Purana. It's like, did you finish the Bhagavatam yet? I didn't say that. I just was thinking it. But finish the Bhagavatam 5, 10, 20, 30 times. Then start thinking about this Purana, that Purana, and make sure you know who translated it, by the way. So, these are principles that the acharyas teach us. Be simple, be focused, be strong. That's a kind of strength. You're down to exactly where you know you can make the impact. That's Bhagavad Gita as it is. Who's gone deeply within that? I know people who have gone deeply within the Bhagavad Gita as it is. They're very learned. They can speak everything from the Gita, and they also know all the Prabhupada's purports. That's learned. That's powerful, and that's focused. And it's uncluttered also, because you know, you've got clear knowledge from the right source. So, important principle. Now, yes. Have another one?
This is Vaikuntha Nayak Prabhu again.
Good.
Sharing a reflection. I really like the point on keeping things simple and to focus on the really important things. Even karmis follow this principle to keep themselves efficient. For example, Mark Zuckerberg always wears similar shirts so that he has one less thing to think about. Like you say, don't major in minor things.
Yeah, that's right. Hair is another thing. I mean, it's like, that's why monks cut their hair off, because then you don't have to deal with it anymore. You don't have to think about it. But I just noticed in doing Sankirtan, how many hair places do you need in one city? I mean, you go from one mall to the next, and there's like, I mean, New York City, we were going up and down into the stores. Don't get me started on nails now. My goodness. I mean, and then you got like a billion colors to pick from. Like, what color do you want? Let me think it over for a few weeks before I figure out what color I want. Too many choices. And this is also kind of a clutter. Keep your life simple. That's why, you know, sadhus like Zuckerberg keep, you know, he's like a sadhu in his own realm, because he's like, you know, that's his thing. You know, he's like deeply into his discipline of being a Vaishya. And so, you know, he like keeps focused. This is what serious people do. So you have to get down to fight and wait. You got to get down to the where you can actually have some impact in your life. Get rid of the extra weight, you know, throw it overboard. If you're being chased by a tiger and you're carrying a box of gold and you got to cross a river, you make a choice. Do we dump the gold or get eaten? So, you know, think about it. Lighten your load. Be like simple in your habits. Helpful. And it's advice that it takes application all the time. It's not that you do it once and then it's over. It's cultivating, staying close to sattva-gun, simplifying your life, requires constant application. You have to keep doing it. Just like you have to keep doing your spiritual practice, you also have to keep applying sattva-gun, because the other gunas will sneak right in. Little passion comes up. It's like, oh, that's a little bit okay. And then ignorance, and boom. It drags you down, so you have to keep that practice going. The last point, which is one you've heard before, but is a topic that comes up all the time in the Shastra, so I like to call change the subject. If you don't like what you're being subjected to, change the subject. I don't like what I'm being subjected to, I'm going to change the subject. That's your right, because you have free will and you're an agent. You can change. You can change a lot more than you think. People have self-limiting beliefs. They think, I can't do this, I can't do that. It's not true. You're a soul. You can do whatever you want, practically. If you just take shelter of Krishna and you apply the principles of the previous acharyas, you can do whatever you want, because you can attain complete perfection and freedom by that process. So take shelter of their strength and change the subject. What do I mean by that? There's a lot of different subject matters that offer themselves to us in this world in various contexts. You don't have to accept them all. You can choose which subject matter you subject yourself to. So this is what Rupa Goswami says the essence of all advice. Tanama rupa charitari sukirtananu smrityo kramena rasana manasi niyoja tishtan raje tananaragi janarugami kalam nayeda kilami tupadesha saram. The saram of all upadesh advice, the cream of all advice, says organize your life around this principle of hearing and chanting. don't let other subject matters take over your life. They'll come in a little bit at a time, get a little interested in them, get kind of addicted to hearing them, and next thing, that's the subject matter. And because of the subject matter, you'll be subjected to various kinds of consciousness, which will waylay your progress in going back home, back to Godhead. If you want to go swiftly and directly to the perfectional stage in devotional service, this verse says, then organize your life around the principle of hearing and chanting about Krishna all the time. And if you can't do it all the time, at least do it every day. And that's what the acharyas say. This kind of advice, which says all the time, for those who can't, means at least once a day. Thoroughly enough so that you get some traction. And every day means at least something. You have to keep the vibration going. Don't break the string. So there's various contexts in which one may have to change the subject, and you have to become expert at that. There are various conversations that come up. You may have to change the subject. Be the one who has the strength to change the subject from something that's partially helpful to something that's fully helpful, to something that's detrimental to something that's actually nourishing and spiritual. Last comments. Yes.
Maharaj, one of the things that you mentioned, like how we can remove the clutter, I like the goals, and especially writing and rewriting every week, if possible, or every day, and then it really makes a lot of change in your focus of the day, and what the sentence is, like know your priorities first, and see that they're having the maximum implication on the life. So
yeah.
If you're doing that, that makes a lot of difference.
There's a lot of apps you can get nowadays that can help with that. Because as Vaikuntha Nayaka Prabhu pointed out, you know, a lot of people, anyone who's efficient, whether it's a spiritual life or material life, is thinking like this. Like, how do I cut out the clutter? I mean, some people are thinking, how do I do this so I can make more money or I can become more successful materially? We're using all the same principles, but for spiritual life. There's a little app that I use called Habit List, I think. Is that what it's called? Huh?
Habits or Habit List? You mentioned earlier.
It's in here somewhere. Habit List, yeah. And every day you open your habit list, you can add more habits. And then as soon as you do your habit that you're trying to develop, you push the little icon, and it registers that you did it for the day. And if you happen to miss it, then it shows a negative, like you missed one day, you missed 2 days, missed 3 days. If you hit it, and then it'll start you over again. You get started over. But it helps to have some marker, whether on paper or software or something like that, where you can keep your habits. Use that. Sankhya purvakanama gana natibi kalavasani krito. The Goswamis, I doubt if they had apps or smartphones, because they were using, like, you know, they're writing on those palm leaves to make books and things like that. But how did they count? They kept. Even we heard in the story of Gopinath Patanayaka, when one of them was put up in the Changa, it was being... they were going to throw him off to kill him on the swords and everything. What was he doing? He was chanting your holy names, they told Lord Chaitanya. Like, and he was, every time he'd finish a round, he'd make a little, because he didn't have any other paraphernalia, he'd make a little mark on his arm. He was counting it all. So you could do that too. Make a little mark on your arm. Whatever you have to do, but count it. That's how you get through one full cycle of a human life and successfully, is count these things up. Find out what's most important and make a template so that you can count it all and then get it in and do it. Vaidhi bhakti, and when it's very strong, and then one gets a taste and it becomes spontaneous. That's what Rupa Goswami is saying. Tannama rupa charitari sukirtananu smrityo kramena rasana manasi niyoja. That you go on doing that, and then kramena, rasana kramena, gradually you'll get a taste, step by step, because of doing this, Where do you go then? Tishtan vraje tananuragi jananugami. Then you'll become situated in Vraj. You'll become situated in the topmost position in the spiritual world, and you'll follow in the footsteps of one of the Lord's beloved devotees. And that comes, as you'll see in the purport here, we can just survey it really quickly, that Prabhupada quotes from his spiritual master in this purport. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has commented as follows upon this verse: one who has not yet developed interest in Krishna consciousness should give up all material motives and train his mind by following the progressive regulative principles, namely chanting and remembering Krishna and his name, form, quality, pastimes, and so forth. That's the regulative principles. In this way, after developing a taste for such things, one should try to live in Vrindavan and pass his time constantly remembering Krishna's name, fame, pastimes, and qualities under the direction and protection of an expert devotee. This is the sum and substance of all instruction regarding the cultivation of devotional service. In the neophyte stage, one should always engage in hearing Krishna Katha. When should one do it?
Always.
In the neophyte stage, one should always engage in hearing. I should have said, how much should one do it?
Always.
Thank you. This is called Shravana Dasha, the stage of hearing. By constantly hearing the transcendental holy name of Krishna and hearing of his transcendental form, qualities, and pastimes, one can attain the stage of acceptance called Varana Dasha. When one attains this stage, he becomes attached to the hearing of Krishna Katha. Now we're getting somewhere. When one is able to chant in ecstasy, attains the stage of smaranavastha, the stage of remembering. Recollection, absorption, meditation, constant remembrance, and trance are the five items of progressive Krishna smarana. At first, remembrance of Krishna may be interrupted at intervals, but later remembrance proceeds uninterrupted. When remembrance is uninterrupted, it becomes concentrated and is called meditation. When meditation expands and becomes constant, it is called anusmriti. By uninterrupted and unceasing anusmriti, one enters the stage of samadhi or spiritual trance. After smarana dasha or samadhi has fully developed, the soul comes to understand his original constitutional position. At that time, he can perfectly and clearly understand his eternal relationship with Krishna. That is called sampati dasha, the perfection of life. This is all precipitated by this careful hearing and chanting, organizing one's life around this principle. Who's it available to? Only special people? Anyone who seriously takes to the path of following in the footsteps of these great acharyas like Rupa Goswami by following their instructions. And the instruction is simple, hear and chant. We have the right books. They're compiled in perfect order. They're presented in such a way that anyone can take them in. But you do have to apply these progressive principles in order to consume them, because you can have a set of Bhagavatams on your shelf and someone will come in 6 years later and open the third canto and it makes a cracking sound like it's never been opened before. Not very good. By 3 years, 6 years, you should have been past the third canto a few times. So you have to be on a regulated schedule to make sure that you're making those rounds. Otherwise, you won't advance in devotional service. It's not so likely. You actually have to apply yourself. And that's why Prabhupada had five classes a day when he first started the program. You'd stop every interval and you'd hear Nectar Devotion, then hear Krishna book, and hear Bhagavad Gita, had Bhagavatam class in the morning, Sarva. When you first joined, how many classes were there? Was that program in place? Can you say anything about it? Sarv took me out. He was my Sankirtan leader in San Francisco. And I came there, but I remember going on Harinam, and we would stop, because we'd go on Harinam all day, and then we'd stop throughout the day, and we'd sit down under a tree, the whole party, and we'd read from Krishna book, and then we'd have Harinam for a few more hours, and then we'd sit down and read something else. And at the temple, we'd have, classes throughout the day. He wanted us to read from these books carefully. Right? Anything else you can say about that, Sarv?
No, it's just I just remember when I joined, they were completely open. They said, "Here, you can stay here, come and go as you wish." I found that it was more fun to take part in classes, Tulsi Puja, going out on the street, dancing, Market and Powell. It was more fun to do that.
Market and Powell, see? You guys are in part of a legacy here. These devotees still go to Market and Powell, yeah.
So if you're given a free choice without any pressure, naturally you come to understand this is more fun. It's more enjoyable. Hare Krishna.
That's nice. In the temple that I joined in, Sarv was there. Was that the first temple you came to?
Seattle
and then there? What was the address there on Valencia? 455 Valencia. Still there. The place burned down, but the original wall, one of the original walls they preserved. And the house Prabhupada stayed in is still there. But it was a beautiful temple. It used to be a mortuary. But mortuaries built very nicely. They're kind of beautiful. There was a skylight in the middle of the temple room. And in the morning, when we have the morning program, the light would come in, and the floors were white, the walls were white, everything was white, right, Sarv? And the contrast with the beautiful, the flowers and the deities and everything, it was just such a beautiful environment. We thank all our listeners who joined us online tonight, for all of you who drove through the dark night of Silicon Valley to come all the way here to the headquarters, where we have live studio audience. And now we're going to have some time to dance for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya is a great dancer, so let's dance. We'll pick up all the asanas, put them away, make plenty of room, and feel free to use all the space in the whole temple room. That's why we got this big hall, so you can dance like mad men and women. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Natchari ar marman, natchari ar marman, hey, natchari ar marman, natchari ar marman, natchari ar marman, natchari ar marman.